Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our expectations series today, and we're going to talk about Kyle Van Noy and Carson Vinson. Joining us to do that is Alec Boulianos. Alec, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Enjoying as much as I can this Orioles season for what it is. And yeah, just moving on with that.
Yeah, some definite misery we don't need to let leak into this show, I hope, in terms of that. But obviously the Orioles on a very rough stretch, and they haven't won since firing Hyde, which is now four straight games. And they've lost them all in various levels of very disappointing fashion.
Yeah,
it's true. All right. Well, let's start. Let's talk a little bit about Carson Vinson. Fifth round draft pick. Actually, they had the pick late in round four, had that weird trade down where they traded back five spots in round four to trade up five spots in round six. It didn't make any sense at all. Never seen a trade like that made. Thought there must have been something wrong with it. They did have an explanation for it. I think it had something having to do with them not being really ready to make a selection, which isn't good. but anyway, we saw some video after the fact, and you know, very much noted that George Warhop was very much banging the table for Carson Vinson.
He was, and understandably so. You look at him and the frame, you can't, you know, obviously can't teach that, but he does feel confident that he's a hard worker that can be taught how to, you know, play at the NFL level, how to develop his body, and also some of his hands techniques. So I'm very excited for Vinson. However, at the time when they did the trade back, I was livid because I really wanted to take Farmer there, and then he went right after. So I hope that Vinson works out. I like the pick a lot. From that perspective, it was just the circumstances were not ideal.
Yeah, two guys they lost out on. The other guy was the Florida defensive lineman, who I'm name is forgetting.
Cam not Johnson?
That's the one. Anyway, Vinson is 6'7", 314. It's very apparent. There's a lot of technical deficiencies in the way he plays the game. He's gotten away with some things at Alabama A&M. That could only occur at a lower level of football. Hand usage is not at all right. He's 14 bench reps. I don't see any likely possibility that he is activated for a game this season. I think that'd probably be a mistake. I don't think he's even close to ready physically to do it. But I'd like to see, particularly this is true at rookie camp, how invested Warhop is in him. I've talked about this on a number of other pods, I know, so I don't want to go into it very deep, but there's clearly coaching going on after every rep. Some of it is technical. And Harbaugh at the podium spoke very directly to the need to get him in the weight room and get him bigger.
Indeed. One of the interesting things about his history is he actually played guard in high school, and he didn't start playing left tackle until he won the job at Alabama A&M, and then he proceeded to start all the games for them during his career there at that position.
Got to wonder who was playing left tackle for that high school.
Right?
Yeah.
Or if he had some crazy growth spurt. But yeah, that was an interesting little tidbit. I was looking at him. I was looking at Roger Rosengarten and some of his camp, or rather combine measurables, just to get an idea of... Because I know, like, we've talked about the bench press, only 14. Relative to his arm length, there's not a good, like, conversion out there. But I would say, you know, 14 at his arm length versus 20 for Roger. You probably wouldn't take the 20 there. But
you'd probably still take the 20.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you take the 20.
Yeah.
So he definitely does need to work on his strength. The coach is not being shy about it. I hope that he has more utility than a never activated, scared to activate player. I don't know if that's necessarily even acceptable. I think it's worth it from a perspective of developing a left tackle, like a potential left tackle, but I would just really hope that he's at a higher level than that in some capacity, even if, you know, he can go back to guard in some capacity. You know, I think there has to be some level of playability for him in order to have a good season, in my opinion.
All right, I'll start with a couple of things. First, one analogy, and then also, you know, I think for Vincent, start with his body type. He's a very vertically proportioned athlete. Not poorly proportioned at all to play left tackle. Seems to have the feet potentially for that position. We'll see if they hold up against the NFL competition, because it's a double jump for him. You know, to never has played any kind of Power Five football, so it'll be a big jump for him to move up. But in addition to that, he's not built like a pair. So that doesn't really leave open the possibility of him moving inside. I don't think it would be natural. I think, you know, could he maybe try and make it work at right tackle? Possibly. I think basically Vincent is left tackle or bust. And I'm fine, by the way, with that gamble. You know, it's the most important offensive line position by far, by a mile. It's the hardest to fill from the size and shape pool. And the Ravens have never really tried, or at least they haven't tried since Gregory Sinat, to find a guy who was a true developmental left tackle. They drafted other guys who played tackle in college, Marshall Yanda or Ryan Jensen, who they knew were moving inside at the NFL level. They've drafted other guys who they knew would never play right tackle, who would never play left tackle in all likelihood. And Rick Wagner, because of some arm length issues, kind of falls into that category. But this is the first guy, you know, and a lot of these guys are going around, the big one being Spencer Brown going to Buffalo, who's now getting a big second contract, that come from a smaller school situation. I've been kind of calling for DaCosta to pull the trigger on a small school pick, and he hadn't done any really in his tenure. This is a good departure from that. And I'm glad that he was able to be swayed by people within his own hierarchy that he trusted to help with this pick. So hopefully the investment that Warhop has helps this situation pay off, but I don't believe he'll be on the field. The analogy I'll make is Saleh. Last year, Saleh was at OTAs and quote unquote gifted the left guard spot. Now, I personally believe, and they've never admitted this, they'd be rather boiled in oil than admit this is what they actually happened. But I think they did it to motivate John Simpson in 2023 to get his ass in gear and basically take accountability for his behavior and his high penalty total by installing somebody who clearly didn't deserve the job ahead of him. And then, you know, we saw how poorly Saleh played during the preseason. He was not ready for an NFL field. And the only activation he got was as a ninth offensive lineman when the Ravens had so many walking wounded early in 23 that they didn't even have a 53rd man they could turn to. I think there were two activations. They used both of those, and then they had activated everyone who could possibly play, and then they had one more spot, and Saleh was it in terms of getting one more guy on the field. That's honestly where I would see Vincent right now. Is I think he's no further ahead than where Saleh was at the start of that 2023 offseason activities, that he'd be in position to see the field this year. I think it's highly unlikely. If he did, it would be a trial by fire. It wouldn't be anything Ravens fans would be happy about, by the way, if it did occur.
Oh, I mean, yeah, there's not a clear path for him to get playing time. And like you mentioned, if he did find a path, that'd be really bad for other stars on the team. I did do some research on what Pat McCary did in college when his pro day. He didn't do a bench presses at the combine, but his pro day apparently he did 23. Because I was just trying to think to myself, like, who are some other
Orlando Brown
compromise comps? Yeah, Orlando Brown. Yeah. And try to see like how viable it might be for him to do anything in the first year. So I we'll definitely have to see. I'm really keen to see him in preseason. He's one of my top people I want to pay attention to. and just see how well he's been able to transition to this game. Like you mentioned, is a double jump for him. And he has, I mean, I think he's in a nice place. Third day is the scout and coach's day. Clearly, this is Warhop's guy. He's already giving him a lot of coaching. He has a lot of coaching that he can receive. So it just really comes down to his work ethic, and we'll see what comes of this pick.
A few statistical things and other things from the tape I noticed, and some of this will be familiar from the draft show, but he had a penalty every 149 snaps in his career, which is yet another technical issue for me. It's way too many for a guy who's playing beneath his class. I mean, he's effectively what should be a stakes horse in a claiming race for Maryland horse racing fans. You know, mm-hmm. if you expose your horse to being purchased away from you if you run him at too low a class, and that's how they keep horse racing competitive. He didn't compete at a good enough level for where he was. Same Penning had the same issue with a lot of penalties in school, even to a greater degree in Penning's case. I think you really have to ask the question of, in 5 years at Alabama A&M, how did he not get approached by a Power Five team and, you know, wheedled into an NIL deal at the very least, when, you know, your pro career is not a sure thing by any stretch. I mean, you know, if there's some NIL money on the table and you're a 21, 22 year old guy, you think you'd be jumping on that. I think they looked at it and probably saw the good feet and the mirror. They had saw at least at the lower level, an okay anchor against the bull rush. Guy who plays a little bit high, you know, I'm never crazy about that. And because he doesn't really use his hands all that well, people can get to the body on him, or could get to the body. Now he did more physically. He could do more physically to lock out and to throw those guys to the ground, which we saw some. But I mean, some of the throwing people to the ground that he did, and you can see on his highlight tape, is something you cannot duplicate at the NFL level versus NFL athletes. Those guys will be too fast, too slippery, too quick to get to your body, too much in the way of counters to deal with that. And, you know, he'll be vulnerable, I think, to speed to power moves, at least initially going to the NFL. He hasn't shown anything in terms of an ability to really take his man 12-6 on a consistent basis. It is something you'd expect out of a guy with his kind of length, is that he would have a good recovery move like that. He's just gotten by too much on his raw athleticism and size at the level he played at. So that's good. It's going to be a big change for him. And it was really apparent in that rookie camp, just, you know, I'm getting coaches about what I consider to be very basic, you know, offensive line fundamentals on a play-by-play basis. Like, you got to get your hands out front on that play kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Was something I heard, you know, basically needs to use his hands. He'd have them extended in a way that'll allow him to attack with them. He can't hold them close to his body like a T-Rex and expect the
yeah.
defender to make it easy for him somehow. So he's kind of a mess, technically. I think we will see him some in the preseason. I think that'll be the really interesting point, is just to see against second half preseason competition. He's going to be going up against players like Joe Evans from last year, who played the whole game of that first game. Decent pass rusher at a Power Five college level, but not a guy who you know, would threaten NFL tackles really to any degree. That's the kind of player he'll face in the preseason games.
Yep. And I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how he competes. I think it'll be really telling if they feel comfortable enough to have him on the roster. Cause I just, even if he's not active on game days, you're one injury away from then asking, like, are you signing somebody? Are you, you know, elevated from the practice squad? Like, eventually you can only hide him for so long. So I really do feel like he needs to show some level of dependability.
Well, the roster spot puts a lot of pressure all across the roster otherwise, because first of all, you're down to 24 offensive players. Probably you'll probably carry 25 defenders and three Wolfpack. So you have 25 plus, you have 24 plus Vincent on offense, 25 on defense, and three Wolfpack, and that's your 53. And they can't cut him, because if they cut him, he'll be claimed by another team in about 2 seconds, given the fact that he was drafted where he was. He's got too much of a frame, and there's too many teams willing to make an investment in a player like that. And the Ravens found that out with Gregory Sinat. He was scarfed up immediately as soon as they cut him and tried to slip him through to the practice squad. It just, you know, it wasn't going to work. And I think that that is the issue, is they have to basically sacrifice a roster spot in Goat's blood for the year because they want to, they want this guy around to practice. I mean, I think you lose a lot of the developmental value if you don't have him on the field and he's just in, say, a classroom setting because he's been IR'd, say, leave him there, leave him there for the year. I think you need to have him practice with the team. You might decide at some point that, okay, he's so far behind in the weight room in terms of what's going on that we're going to make that his only job for the rest of the season after he's got, gone 6 or 7 weeks on the roster and practice with him. You could decide that, but I think the chance of him actually playing in a game this year is just, is beyond remote based on what I'm seeing.
All right. Well, I'm definitely curious to see it as well.
Okay. Talk about what a good season is and a great season.
Well, for me, like I've been alluding to, I think in a good season, he shows flashes in the preseason that make you comfortable with him as a break glass option in the season. He has a clean preseason from a penalty perspective and does not show signs on sportsmanlike conduct that he had in college. Improves his hand placement and develops additional strengths to solidify a backup role in 2026.
Okay, that sounds good. I said good ceiling, has solid camp, shows enough in preseason to whet our appetite and keep his spot on the 53 to practice with the team all season. I think that's really the thing he needs to prove, is that he's worth keeping on the team to practice for the entire year. Sees no more than a handful of regular season snaps, ideally none, learns and hones positional skills prior to 2026, fills out his frame and gains significant functional strength prior to 2026 training camp. He's got 1 year to basically do that. And by the way, if anybody's ever tried to do that, that is not a long time to gain functional football strength. You got a lot of the things you got to do. You got to be at meetings. You got to be at practices. You've got to do all the other things that's expected of you of a football player, including recovery. And you got to gain a lot of functional strength during that time. That is a big freaking responsibility. And the Ravens almost need to have a strength coach dedicated to him to hawk what he's doing and make sure that he's making the most out of this very limited window he has to turn himself into an NFL player. All right, let's talk about a great season. What do you got, Alex?
Is able to help out on special teams unit or as a sixth blocker on game days. Development exceeds expectations, and his 2026 good season projections are realized by mid-year 2025.
Okay, that is highly optimistic. So I'm going with the 80th percentile, and I still have something I think is pretty optimistic. Outstanding pace of development puts him in position to help as a game day activation as backup in case of emergencies. So that's basically the break glass option for later in the year. Plays a limited number of snaps in mop-up duty. He could also get a trial by fire in the top 20% somewhere, but I don't think it'd be at the 80th percentile, and it certainly would not be a good thing. The Ravens like him enough not to draft another offensive tackle in 2026. So that's the best compliment you can give the guy. If he's made enough progress that you don't feel the need to draft another offensive tackle, I think that's a good thing.
I agree. It does feel like a position that they would target again if they feel like this project's not going well. Basically not having to allocate another asset to that position would be really valuable, particularly given the fact how hard it is to find left tackles. You're either doing it in the first round or you're doing what they did here and just preying on traits and seeing what you can do.
Yeah, they haven't really had the opportunity. They've had too much immediate need at that left tackle spot to wait on it. So they got Rosengarten and they re-signed Stanley, and both of those in consecutive years looked like a mountain to climb, frankly, with those two positions, because we didn't really buy into necessarily the notion that Stanley was going to be back and as healthy and good a player as he was in 24 after a pretty darn mediocre 23 season, really bad until the final few weeks. And then he stayed healthy and he was good. And Rosengarten outperformed most of the other tackles that came in. So some of the mountain has been climbed, but if they're going to replace Stanley, this was their opportunity to take a developmental chance when they still have basically 2 years to play with to get this guy ready for their job.
And at his cost, I think if he only sees action for 1 year of his 4-year contract, that's not the worst considering it's left tackle if he plays well.
Okay, so you're saying if he played only in his fourth year, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think that's true. I kind of hope he's ready to play in year 3 and 27.
Sure.
Because Stanley might be out the door at that point. So obviously a couple of things could happen is if you're looking at all the if you try to diagram this out, Stanley could get tired of playing football and not wanting to be on an NFL field because the injuries and the rehabs and all the things he's got to do to keep his body ready to go might really take their toll by then. He could see a decline in his own play and not want to play that last year. The Ravens could see a decline in Stanley's play and not want to pay him for that last year and decide that that cut is appropriate and it may happen.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
The Ravens may see enough in terms of development from Rosengarten that he can move to the left side. That would ease their anxiety in terms of having that happen. But I think that the best thing that can happen is in 2 years, Carson Vinson is a much better football player, an NFL-ready football player who could step in there. And then he'd have 2 years with the Ravens and the possibility of an extension, of course, but 2 years at left tackle for the Ravens.
Yep, agreed. So I hope it works out. This is kind of exciting, in my opinion. Like you said, we haven't really had an opportunity to do this in a while. So yeah. It's a high, I would say it's a medium risk, high reward play.
Yeah, I go with that. It's about as low a risk as you can ever get drafting a left tackle. And that's why whenever there's trades for a left tackle, you know, a bad washed up, never been good left tackle is often a sixth round pick instead of a seventh round pick, where most players, if you're going to cut them anyway, it's going to be a conditional seventh. Is going to be the most you get for them. But oftentimes a tackle is going to end up costing you more.
Yep.
All right, let's go move on and talk about Kyle Van Noy a little bit. A very exciting year from him. Made his first Pro Bowl at age 33. There is some question about his age. There's a difference between the PFF age and the PFR age. I think we might've talked about that this last year. I think we decided that, he will actually be 34 this coming season, and he's not 34.9 now as Pro Football Focus as his birth date. So hopefully that's not his real birth date. But had a career high 12 and a half sacks, and that was among 21 quarterback hits, also a career high. And one thing that I think is a concern potentially for both of the Ravens outside linebackers is they both have truly exceptional close rates. And that can mean a couple of things. It can mean your secondary is playing pretty well and you're getting some cleanup sacks. It can mean your interior defensive line, I think this was the case, is doing some good things to morph the pocket, get the quarterback moving off the spot, and they're picking up some sacks. But neither of those, and Owe was right around 50%, but Van Noy was 43%. Neither of those is likely to be sustainable. So in terms of the actual sack number, I wouldn't expect them. And by the way, it's not like I didn't say the same thing about Madubuike last year, who had an outrageously good conversion rate for an interior offensive lineman with a 13 or 13 and a half sack season. But he's playing over his head right now, not just beating Father Time, but really beating the quality of his own play to a certain degree with that sack total.
Yeah, if there was a expected sack total, like there's like expected batting average, you probably would say it's a little inflated right now, the results he's getting versus the process, so to speak. I really feel like Kyle Van Noy runs into this interesting problem because of Malik Harrison going, that we need to figure out who's going to play in our base defense and do some of that dirty work. Mm-hmm. This is obviously going to be reps and energy taken away from those guys. Van Noy feels like a natural fit for that because he's a veteran. He's done it before. But you maybe lose some of his upside. But you could say that basically across the board with Owe. And then you have to question if it's a skill set for Adisa Isaac or Ojabo if he makes the team.
Right. I'm in the long shot position with Ojabo, and I think we already did that show. So it's yeah. So I just don't see how he makes it. I mean, it could happen if depth breaks down in camp for some reason due to injury, but I think it's otherwise unlikely. So Robinson is the primary guy who's in there on early downs. And then I think you do have to think about, is it Isaac? Is it even Green? Although I think the more likely use of Green is as a situational pass rusher to kind of magnify his importance. Do you move Owe over to Sam and get some value out of him on early downs and maybe ask him to play two positions with some, you know, some situational work, but also some early down work? Or do you see if Isaac can do it? Isaac has some of the quickness that would probably translate pretty well to dropping to coverage. So we'd have to see if that would work. That's something, by the way, that Van Noy has been doing less and less by year. 62 times he dropped to coverage last year, which was 12%. His career low was 9.4% in 2023. But Kyle Van Noy has played over 2,000 NFL coverage snaps. He's a guy who's typically played a lot higher percentage, played some off-ball time in that that's included. But he's really become a more specialized edge setter, slash pass rusher than a true pure Sam linebacker in the sense we think of that in Baltimore, a Tyus Bowser, a Matthew Judon type who can add a lot of flexibility to your pass rush that way.
Right. And I think it's something that the scheme's kind of moved away from just based on how they choose their packages based on matchups. So, I think that's one of the biggest questions going into it. I've considered even, you know, if Buchanan could potentially fulfill that role, kind of similar to how Harrison was an inside linebacker that fulfilled that role. And I don't see it. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I think it's going to be a tough ask. And I kind of think it might be Van Noy just because he's the vet. Because I feel like, you know, Owe in a contract year, they might not want to do that to him. They might want to give him more of those pass rush opportunities and save his motor for that. But yeah, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I guess you hope to get the most out of Owe in whatever way this year, because you up his value. It's probably a good thing in terms of the comp pick. You up his value, of course, it becomes that much more unlikely you'll re-sign him. But I think that's kind of the secondary concern. Among the three of them, I do expect to see more rush nickel this year just because I think they have more assets to rush the passer this year from outside linebacker. I think the last couple of years they've been very short. The end of last year, they were desperately trying to protect those two guys, Owe and Van Noy, from being on the field and wearing them out. Now, the concern is probably not quite at the same level. They've got five guys, all of whom are going to want playing time, and they're going to be having to hand out snaps with an eyedropper again and trying to figure out how they can get them all the game. But I do expect we're going to have five activations at outside linebacker in the bulk of weeks, even though that takes away generally some from your secondary or your inside linebacker group. I expect that Adisa Isaac in particular is a guy who play a lot of special teams, and they'll have to figure out how they can use him at outside linebacker.
Agreed. Yeah, I think five's the right number there.
What about, you know, obviously he's in the middle of a 2-year contract here where he made $9.75 million, and there may be some LBTE money, NLTBE money that's included in that I have not included in that, but it's not that much money. I mean, even if it were 12, 13 million in total, which I don't think it is, then it's still a fantastic bargain for this. I think we need to basically one more time celebrate just how effective Eric DaCosta and the Ravens have been at finding guys who can provide something to this pass rush very effectively and inexpensively from the scrap heap.
It does seem to be a avenue that they continue to explore and exploit and have in their back pocket for roster construction. I think they would have done it again if Mike Green didn't fall to them. So it's definitely one of those things that they've done consistently, and frankly, they might do again if they decide after this year that Van Noy's aged out and they want to get a younger, older player.
And that's what it would be, but that's exactly right. do you look at this as a triumph for Chuck Smith as well, or do you think that Van Noy had a lot of this, or do you think as a veteran and as a guy who played a lot of other positions with middling success as a pass rusher, you know, he was always a 5-6 sack a year guy for about five straight years in there before he came to Baltimore. Do you think he's a guy who said, you know what, I really got to take this opportunity to beat the aging curve and work with Chuck Smith? Or do you think it was pretty much all in his own pocket when he came here?
I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I think both are true. His role changed when he came to Baltimore. He was asked to pass rush a little bit more than he had previously. And I think then you saw the results of that. But at the same time, Chuck Smith's so well regarded. How can he not learn something while he's here and make the most of that opportunity? Like you said, I think Chuck Smith's been one of the biggest acquisitions for the Ravens from a coaching perspective. And he's done, it's clear the work and the impact he's done. And it goes across all pass rushing players, not just the outside linebackers. The team has been really consistently at one of the top sack teams, despite maybe not having a guy who is, one of those top sack guys. Obviously, Van Noy had an amazing year last year, but you look at it and you don't see a top edge rusher on this team, but able to put it together.
And they had great finish rates. They had Clowney was a great, first pressure guy, the best he's ever been in his career in terms of as a pass rusher. There's so much to point to. I can't even tell you how thankful I am that Chuck Smith is here. And I'm really happy they're getting his input in terms of the draft with pass rushers. Can't help but hope that he's the one who really said, yeah, we got to get Mike Green.
He was super hyped up in the video that they showed. So,
yeah. I mean, and who wouldn't be? I mean, he's one of the top pass rushers in the draft. The question would be: did he get to Green? Did he look at Green State and say, whatever we need to do, we need to figure it out because Mike Green is the second or maybe third best pass rusher in this whole draft. And if you're Chuck Smith, I don't even think you really care about the chalk. That might say Abdul Carter is a complete different player than Mike Green is. You might say Mike Green is the best pass rusher in the draft. It's an unbelievable get for the Ravens at 59. Totally unbelievable the first two rounds for the Ravens to get those two players. And I for the people who think I am down on Malachi Starks, all I'm going to say, I'm going to say this one more time, is that I think Malachi Starks would have a great pick at 35 or 40. I did like Emenwori better. There's already things I can see in terms of Malachi Starks where I can understand at least why the Ravens fell in love with him in terms of his football intelligence and the way he explains things at the podium. And it's just very sharp. But regardless of the order, if I didn't know the order, what it happened, I heard we got Mike Green and Malachi Starks. I'm happy as a clam, obviously, from that double. So for sure. Very exciting.
It really is. I always love the draft classes, but this one feels special already.
Yeah. Let's talk about what a good season looks like for Kyle Van Noy this year, because an older player like this, fighting against father time, fighting against the aging curve, and coming off a career year, I have a certain set of questions I always have to ask in terms of setting the 60th percentile results, but let's hear from you first.
Sure. I think there's a little bit of regression. I say he's the dependable piece in the passing downs with about six sacks and other pressures that lead to sacks. Like we mentioned, I think the Ravens are really good at having second pressures get the sack. Plays less snaps than he did in prior seasons due to Mike Green, Adisa Isaac, and Robinson all taking steps. So just like a piece of the rotation this year. I think a good season, it would be completely acceptable if he's not, this Pro Bowler, kind of maybe a little bit closer to 2023, maybe even slightly less. I think that's a very acceptable and still good season, particularly for his age and kind of where the roster's at.
I mean, he had a great season in 23 with 9 sacks and change, but here's my good season.
I'm saying like even worse than that would be okay.
Yeah, and that's basically what I said. Active for 13-plus games, loses minimally to father time, but production falls back to pre-2023 levels with approximately 5 to 6 sacks and a good pyramid of supporting pressures. That's important. That means he's still contributing and probably creating out sacks for other players. Cedes more of run defense role to other outside linebackers, and projected snaps decline to about 550. And I think he might have been at 696 this last year, so he had a lot of snaps. This is a pretty big decline I'm projecting here. 32 per regular season game is what I would look for. The Ravens' overall pass rush consolidates effectiveness, including almost 3 sacks per game, and they had more than that this last year. I think they might have had 54 in a 17-game season, which would be 51 at three per game. And that would be a factor. The key factors would be that Mike Green, game script, and scheme are all plus factors. So they can tolerate a decline in Van Noy's sack total being pretty significant because they're getting sacks from other places that'll lead them to almost the same total overall, right around 50 sacks, let's say. So you normally couldn't take a 6 or 7 sack decline from Van Noy very easily and still reach the same aggregate sack total. But having Mike Green come in, playing with more positive game script this year, which I think is a possibility, and having more schemed up pressure from L2 or the slot for that matter, could all produce some additional sacks for this team.
Oh, for sure. And I think there's just so many places that these sacks can come from. Travis Jones, you mentioned Mike Green. Adisa Isaac had basically no stats last year. You know, there's players that could contribute. And I completely agree with that assessment.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be hard to see. 2 years ago, it was the slot corner position, which produced 7 sacks. I don't think it'd be that hard to see a combination of Marlon Humphrey and Kyle Hamilton producing 5 sacks. Yeah. I don't think, you know, I think you get Teddy Buchanan or Trenton Simpson maybe as a combination producing 3 or 4 sacks. I don't think that would be outrageous. So, yeah, there's some players who I think are less likely to pick up some of the sack slack, but a lot of it is going to be positive game script and getting home with some of the pass rush assets that they have that are much deeper than they have been or were in 24 anyway. Awesome. What does a great season look like?
For me, I said somehow does it again with an 8 to 10 sack season, improves to be a great value on the Ravens roster. Is able to contribute to some of the dirty work I mentioned earlier on in the base package. And lastly, he mentors the younger pass rushers to have a lasting impact, even if he's not extended.
That's a good one. That is a really good one. I'd like to see him mentor him in a lot of ways. I have something interesting to say about that maybe at the end of this, but let me go to my great season. I'll be quick with it. Continues to surprise with another fine season at 34 by maintaining conditioning and focus on the small improvements needed to keep up. Pressure pyramid is larger than in a good season. Productivity similar to 2023, but likely with fewer sacks. So I'm saying his pyramid is wider at the base in terms of a lot of pressures, and he still ends up with a number less than 9.5, but a decent number of sacks. Run defense is good enough that he doesn't need to be taken off the field on early downs, other than as a freshness concern. And they have lots of guys to play the later downs. You've alluded to it earlier. They have a lot of pass rush specialists on this team. So if Van Noy, if his job were really to play the early downs, it wouldn't be the end of the world because you'd still get some value out of him certainly that way. Projected snaps in the 600 to 700 range, and the Ravens explore an extension. I'm not even sure that's the right answer, by the way, for this team, but I think it's something you ask Kyle if he wants to keep playing, if he wants to go, you know, earn a bucket of money somewhere else with one last contract, or what the answer would be. But if he's in this great season, there will be more teams than just the Ravens that would be interested in his services, I assume, in 2026.
Yeah, for sure. And it's one of those things where I don't know, kind of like what you're mentioning, he's hard to extend past this year. You have like a lot of these younger guys. If maybe you keep him around if you don't keep Owe. But it's just hard to keep such an old player that might go at any moment. I mean, he's just a mercenary at that point. So he leaves you a little, the amount of production that you're expecting out of him and getting out of him, it leaves you vulnerable when he does eventually walk. You kind of do want to have like a younger option.
Yeah, I agree completely. And you don't want to get into a situation where he becomes a not a going concern basis on the contract, and you end up with an old maid contract where he signs for 2 years to play one or for 3 years to play two or any of that stuff, where you're basically overpaying for the second year option on that contract when the player doesn't really want to play it, right, or the player isn't going to be prepared to play it, or the Ravens aren't going to want him to play it.
Sure.
After a year. So all of those, I guess, are possible. All right. Outstanding. Always to talk football with you, Alec. Tell folks where they can talk with you online.
For sure. You can find me online, A. Poulianis, and happy to talk football if you send me a message.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for all the listens. We've been noticing show's doing great, and we really appreciate what you've done to help promote it. Keep looking for that. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Please tell one more person, one older person, show them how to get to it on the computer. Most of our downloads, by the way, are by phone. About 90% of the people tune into the show by phone. I understand that, but there's a barrier there between some people who might really appreciate this content who are older and don't do everything off their phone like this. So if you can help, that'd be great. Alec, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.